there's a change of title, since it won't fit the theme of the pattern formation in physics, but now the pattern in your brain. And I'll briefly introduce the philosophy we have about the modeling of our visual cortex and which part it is. I will illustrate later. And especially I'll zoom in the particular issue which is related to patterns of spontaneous activities of individual neurons, and especially the functional underlying of which is the long-range connections. And I'll show the experiment. Now, all this motivated us for the development of kinetic theory. And that theory can be done, it turned out, you know, becomes very powerful and can study from mean-driven dynamics to fluctuation-driven dynamics. And in a certain coarse grain in time, you even can get very familiar equation like Fokker-Planck. And then I'll turn to the application of the theory to the spontaneous activities of your single neuron in your brain again. So that's your brain, and these are two eyes. And you receive visual signals and go through so-called LGN, that's the part processing your information, direct to so-called primary visual cortex. And that's almost the first part of the information processing you get. And the question is, why do we focus on this particular area? Brain is massive and very heterogeneous and a lot of networks interacting with each other. If you focus on very high order, the problem is immediately you will find your consciousness may determine what the network is going to do. So you prefer to focus on something simpler, which is directly related to physical external world and less being driven by internal world. So that's the piece we are focusing on. And that piece, the primary visual cortex in our human brain, about a credit card size on the back of your head. And we'll alternate between cat and monkey, the cat be specific, which are sort of two models for our primary visual cortex in the experiment. Now it turns out every neuron in your brain, now when I say brain, it's just this particular V1, has following property. If my bar from this bar orient a particular direction, for example, this is a bar, I code it as the color red, and this is piece of tissue on your brain, and it turns out neurons in this location, say here there's a particular neuron, and that neuron will like this particular bar, meaning when you are shining this bar on the eyes, on your eyes, and the neuron here will start to fire, while the neurons located in the green side may not fire. When your bar starts rotate to the green orientation, and green part will start to fire. So this is the physical location on your brain, and these neurons actually code different orientations by their locations. Now you see, if your whole bar rotates 180 degrees, you rotate back, right? So now you see, this does have a pinwheel structure from one angle red, like the blue one, then turn to 90 degrees of the green one, then go to yellow, then turn back, 180 degrees back. So you see a pinwheel, and it has to be a singularity here, because that's part you cannot decide which angle you like. And now you also look at the tiling between left and right. You see, this is supposed to tile this way, and this pinwheel tiles the opposite, counter-rotating. And the angle you like along the edge between left and right are continuous. And this is optical imaging experiments. No, it's alive, and you shine lights on your tissue. They say open up your skull, and okay. It's a two-dimensional slice. Yeah, it's a plane structure, okay. So in some sense, on V1, it turned out not necessarily V1. V1 is just the word for shorthand of primary visual cortex for now. It's a layered structure. Everything is layered in our brain. And it not only is it a visual part, auditory part is also layered. And even the olfactory part, if you look into it, I also read layered. So there's something important about layer structure. So far, we are not going to address that particular point. So essentially, we are going to take this particular view, all these layers, in the depth, they are quite equivalent. Okay, so that's the view we're going to take. Yeah, so pinwheels are... is that's a different thing. So that's just 2D and goes down, presumably about the same. That's the structure you should think about. Yeah, constant in a Z direction. Okay. So what phenomenon we are really interested in is really trying to understand these visual illusions. Now, here, I did not draw any line, but you do feel the triangle is floating above this Pac-Man, and there is a line here. And if you go to your brain and find the neuron which is steered at this location, it does fire, which means somewhere the physical entity is not there, but neurons thought it was there, and it started to fire, okay? Similarly, this line I did not draw. It's just an illusion. You feel there's a line here. Now, this, you see there's some dots moving around if your visual system are proper. And with a small change of the geometry, physically you say, oh, I only put a little circle here. Immediately you see the enhancement of the black dots, and this is a very annoying piece of thing, okay? So now the question is, obviously, okay, so far, obviously what I'm saying obvious to me right now, but not obvious to you, meaning these require some understanding of how neurons talk to each other over larger distance, okay? Because for close distance, they only stay very close in the visual space too. And these effects only can happen, these are far apart in your visual field. So, which means neurons between these two are actually quite separated. So we need information about long-range interactions. And this is a little different animal, but it's a very pretty experiment. That's a chushu. It's about this big little animal. And it has similar pinwheel structures, like particular angles. This is also optical imaging experiments. But most interesting part is you should stare at these black ones. By injecting chemicals, and black ones, roughly speaking, is just saying who are talking to what. And now you see locally, they have, okay, this part is a chemical injection site, so let's forget that. So locally, it looks like quite isotropic. Then you notice, if I inject a particular angle, actually, I shine this particular angle only this light blue or cyan color, and look, the long range one only talk to the patch which is in the same orientation. It doesn't talk to red, it doesn't talk to yellow, and also talk only along this direction, the light which was shining, okay? So that's the information of long range order. Now, so let's be less ambitious. Instead of going direct to these illusion problem to build models, we have to select some experiments. We are able to get some insight about this long-range functional architecture. So here is a particular experiment. You have a little kitty here, and it's showing this orientation light here, vertical one. And you can simultaneously record its single neuron firing pattern, these arrows meaning when they're firing. And you can also do optical imaging by looking at particular dyes. And the intensity of those lights essentially is proportional to the voltage of that membrane potential of the neuron. So what do you observe in the following? The so-called preferred cortical state in following, whenever that I first stare at the particular neuron and find out which angle this neuron likes, supposed to the vertical one, then whenever it fires, I'm going to average out the whole potential profile of the cortex. And that is the potential average potential and the relatively large causing few pinwheels. Then this one essentially says, I'm going to do average regardless of whether it fires or not. And you'll see the very similar structures. But that's less interesting. Most interesting is following. If you already obtained this kind of evoked preferred cortical map, then you turn off your external thing. The neurons will spontaneously fire. And when you measure whenever they fire, you average out its potential. That's this one, spontaneous one. Look exactly like this, but with a very high correlation coefficient. And this is another cat, and this is evoked one, this is spontaneous one, and with a high correlation coefficient between these. And also notice, if I take this as one of my reference one, then I constantly start to average, correlate with this particular picture. You get a so-called similarity index. And this similarity index starts, you know, fluctuating, and higher one meaning it looks just like the one which is being driven by external signal. And there's a time about few hundred milliseconds correlation length. So that's the experiment. And the question is, what's really underlying these self-spontaneous activities and these patterns? So we are going to address this particular question and build the model. Here is our individual neuron model, and this equation looks quite simple. It just, you know, relaxation, and if this term is positive, then this is the driving term, and this term is always negative because epsilon I holds so low, so this is always a depressing term, so inhibitory effect. So this neuron I is modeled this. So the voltage basically between the rest and the threshold. And this neuron will do this. Whenever it hits threshold, it will emit a so-called action potential and then immediately resets to the rest potential, epsilon R. And wait there for refractory tau and start to move again and fire again. And or so it will get a lot of these kind of firings. Then whenever it fires, it will deliver a conductance to neuron J. So basically, if I fired, then the J-th neuron, this piece will change by this particular amount, the G, okay? And this G has two time scales, depend on neurotransmitters. One is about 5 milliseconds. Another one is very long, called NMDA, about 80 to 100 milliseconds. So that's the G will deliver between different neurons. That's how they talk to each other. So in general, I this just have a one piece because for different neurons, inhibitory and excitatory all have this. I'm just picking up an excitatory one. So it's driven by LGN, the external one, itself has certain, okay, this is a model assumption. Every neuron in this piece of tissue has some kind of uniform driven rate, Poisson spikes. So there's no structure in space, no time, it's just a rate of this particular noise. Then this piece models how neurons talk to each other. For example, if J-th neuron start to fire, it will deliver a particular G to I. If this J neuron is local, it will deliver this piece, the shorter one. And if it also depends on the distance between JXI and JI, there's a weight to it. If the neuron is very far, so that's a long-range one, it will deliver a MMDA one, which is a long-range one, long-range in time, okay? So that's our model assumption. And this is really assumption here, meaning I only talk to neurons far using this transmitter. Talking closer one, use EMBA as a shorter one. So that's how you build the network. For each pinwheel, color again codes orientation, and then you tile these pinwheels this in two-dimensional latex way. Of course, in your brain, it's not that regular, but in our model, it's very regular. So this is the pinwheel tiling and the left eye, right eye. Again, we say the continuity in the angles along this edge between left and right. And locally, the neurons, whenever talk to each other close, there's a range about 200 microns, the excitatory length scale, to talk to each other, meaning I will always excite to make your voltage higher if you are within 200 milliseconds, microns. Then there's a time, is a spatial scale, the inhibitory one, is about 100 microns. If you're within this spatial range, if I fire, I will make your voltage lower. Okay, so that's the inhibitory and the excitatory. For long range, we have to build in this particular anisotropy. So these circles represent the neurons, which angle they like. So this is one pinwheel, and there's another pinwheel as another. And interaction only can occur if this neuron likes the vertical one, it will only talk to the vertical one. Meaning, far away, that pinwheel will not talk. And this one, for example, only talk to this slanted one, then they will find the pinwheel which have the slanted one and only talking to the patch which has the same orientations. Then there's a slight spread, meaning it's not just delta function along the same angle. Slight spread, meaning the local closer ones, you still will talk. Okay, so that is the interaction we implemented in this network. So this initiated the talk, and they will talk to these, and weaker, the density in, reflects the strength of the long-range connections. So what would happen if you don't have long-range connections in this particular network? You essentially see homogeneous pattern in the voltage space, nothing really interesting. And this part is a G, this part is voltage. The color red is a higher G, and this blue stands for inhibitory one on this side, and the red patch is an excitatory conductance. So now, if you build in long-range order, what would happen is this doesn't have, what I'm showing now doesn't have any external one. It still has spontaneous pattern change. Oh, that, unfortunately, I suppose I'm able to do the this MPEG movie, but my computer cannot run, so I'm just using my keyboard, stepping through. Time stepping in and solutions, okay? So now you see, occasionally you have very strong particular angles start show up, and you see these blobs in the voltage one. And these patterns repeat and goes back. And that's precisely what you observe in similarity curve in experiment. It constantly comes back to the preferred cortical states. And in these are relative preferred one, and you see the blob. It reminds you let me go back later. So you keep stepping, in the end you see these patterns actually repeat in a statistical way. No, it never approaches steady state. Okay. And interestingly, you see now you all see the blobs, highly correlated with the external drive. So most important thing is there's a time scale. Whether you're right or not, you can check whether, you know, it's against experiment is the right time scale to repeat statistically. Also, you see these blobs, which is correlated with the preferred cortical state or not. So that is a large integral fire network simulation and 100,000 neurons. It's almost, I can call it a state-of-art neural network simulation using point neurons. But now the question is, after you've seen all this, how much analytical mathematical structure we can understand from these kind of problems? So now I will turn to a theoretical endeavor how to understand these neuronal firing dynamics. Now I'm going to simplify, instead of this full network, I just look at a patch of it, which have spatially, essentially say very similar, all these neurons statistically look very similar in a local patch. And I'm going to just, for mathematical convenience, presentation convenience, I'm going to just talking about excitatory case, and inhibitory one can be also handled. So you see the voltage essentially goes through this relaxation and driven by G. And G goes through relaxation unless it receives the input, either from LGN or from other neurons. Okay, so that's the system we're looking at. And the P here stands for the following oppositional fact. Neurons in your brain actually do not fire reliably. Meaning, if I should fire, actually sometimes I do not fire. Unlike signals, neurons From the sensory one, if you touch something, immediately that spike will never lose and just keep going to your brain and tells you you better do something. But within your brain, oftentimes neuron has high failure rates. Dependent experimentalist, which can come from 90% of failure rates, meaning out of 10 spikes I only deliver once, to 10% failure rates, okay? And right there, it's not very clear yet. Especially why, in our higher cortex, we should have these. So that reflects that fact. However, for our theory, it turns out to be useful. Now, the question becomes, instead of looking at the individual voltage, I'm going to look at following object. I'm going to ask, what's the probability in that population I will have a neuron, regardless of which one, has a voltage V and a conductance G, okay? Then, on the assumption, when the number of neurons are very big in this population, and the summed cortical spikes, meaning all neurons start to fire and it start to come to me, and these add up, become a Poisson. And that assumption only requires if everyone fires very low rate and almost independent. A mathematical example in an essential essential limit argument, you have a Poisson process. And I won't go through the derivation, probably take an hour or two to go from here to this kinetic equation, meaning the evolution of this rho, one point density evolution. Now you see this piece is almost trivial, simply just streaming dynamics of this and streaming dynamics of G. Where? Little V. Where? V depends on T.
Where is space?
Oh, no space. This is a homogeneous one. Right. Yeah. Okay. Has a space structure in it. So now what I'm doing is I'm going to zoom into a very small part, a coarse grain neuron, and want to see what dynamics it has. Okay? So that's how the philosophy works. Now, this piece is simply, if the rate of this external one is a new zero, and then this receive one delta function, basically G will jump by F divided by sigma. So you can see that's how it comes in, okay? And we can rigorously derive this piece. And now this piece requires assumption, what I just said. If other spikes come to me as Poisson, then it will jump by this amount, PS11N times A, I just viewed as a constant here, and divided sigma. So that's the piece. And what's the rate of the other neurons? It's precisely the population firing rate. So that's the M we are interested in, how fast this bunch of neurons are firing. So that's the kinetic equation. Now, the kinetic equation, of course, still V is a two-dimensional V and G. So it's 2 plus 1 d PDE and not even ordinary one. Here you clearly see the non-local one. And so not easy to really even numerically solve this. Anyone who have done hyperbolic one would worry about these solutions. So let's reduce the problem. See if we can get an effective equation for V only, the rho V dynamics only. One way you see, n, if n is infinity or very large, I can simply expand this as a Taylor expansion and pick up the first one, and the first one has 1 over n, and here has n, so cancel out. My equation becomes n independent, which is a mean-driven limit. And similarly, you handle this f. Oops. Now I'm in trouble. This movie start to... Okay, I have to... So the first Taylor expansion gives you this piece of equation. And this is so-called mean-driven. And this is simply the conservation law of the neuron numbers. Now, on the assumption, if rho vg is uncorrelated between v and g, which turns out the synapse failure, which means that they are not reliable firing, will make this assumption actually valid. Then you can close this equation to the v only and the g simply evolve this and coming to the flux of this G. And so What happens to this set of kinetic equations? Basically says, this is talk about how this rho will evolve in V-space, and what's the flux. And what's the firing? Firing basically says whenever the flux arrives at the threshold, V threshold, and that will be a firing rate. So that's how you determine the firing rate of this whole equation. And you can also solve the state equation to find the rate M, although it's implicit because this M also encoded in G bar, because G bar contains M. So you can solve all this. And the prediction for the distribution rho V in this theory has 1 over AV plus B form, which means if I flip 1 over rho, it should be a straight line. So what here we plot the dark line, the darker one you see is a collection of neurons, integral fire neurons in numerical simulation, corner neuron simulation, the four ODEs, and versus the kinetic theory, the yellow one, and they fit very well. And also another theory, theoretical prediction is all these G's should be distributed at a particular value, is simply a delta function, and that you look at the experiment, numerical experiment, is also a very good solution. And here just tells you, if you do have synaptic failure, G and V are uncorrelated. So this red dots are telling you whenever you have connection P, which means the connection rate, 1 over P is the failure rate, whenever you have a connection, this correlation coefficient is 0, while there is connection, then it jumps to a non-zero. So that seems all very nice. However, there's a problem, because you do require the number of N goes to infinity. And if you zoom into small patch of neurons, you never get that number. And also, there's an even deeper problem. Here's another experiment. You shine light to the cat, and there's a scan orientation, but orientation you can have different contrast, high and low. Now, just stare at the blue one, which is low contrast. This one is voltage trace as time evolves, that neuron's voltage. And average over many neurons, so the population average. The problem now you see is it never arrives at the threshold. So if you think about the threshold, if I want to talk about the mean voltage, then the model says you're not going to fire. However, if you zoom into each individual neuron, what happens is these neurons constantly fire at each. So only after population averages that disappears. Okay, so now you basically said the threshold here for the cat is minus 55 somewhere here. And if you use the mean picture, nothing, and start to fire. But here in the experiment, you really see the final rate way before the threshold has arrived. Okay. So there's a fluctuation for each individual voltage. What do you do with this? How do you theoretically incorporate this kind of phenomenon? Recall we have this kinetic equation. Instead, thinking n is infinity. Let's make n large but finite. So I can expand this to second order, keep the Taylor expansion to the second derivative, and you end up with this equation. Bring in a little bit diffusion structure. And this sigma g depends on the firing rate and input rate. Now again, this is a complicated 2 plus 1 equation, whether you can, again, reduce the dynamics or not for realistic understanding. So what we just saw in an infinity case, the mean-driven dynamics works well if you assume G and V are uncorrelated. But what do you mean by correlation? I mean fluctuation? Fluctuation basically says if your G becomes very big, you're likely to have bigger V, so you have larger firing rates. Okay. So which means G and V have to be correlated. If you're correlated, then you consider the hierarchy of conditional moments. By giving the voltage of V, you ask, what's the conditional moment of G? This is mu 1, and second moment mu 2, so on and so forth. So you can marginalize this equation to G, that itself closed. And this is a very trivial equation, and in Reiter-Donnier condition, you find the invariant measure is Gaussian. But now there's a slight problem because my G can never go below to zero. It's always above zero. So now the invariant measure is the Gaussian invariant measure turns out still to be a good approximate solution. For example, here the red line is a theoretical curve and the blue line is a numerical simulation of the invariant measure of the full dynamics So that part's fine. Then second part is about rho. If you marginalize to rho, you found what happens is it depends on first moment, conditional moment. Then you say, I'm going to take a derivative to the first conditional moment. I can get another equation. Unfortunately, it depends on sigma squared, the conditional variance, which depends on second conditional moment. So you get infinite hierarchy. And that's the common problem in any of this kinetic theory. If you want to chop it off, what do you do? So our closure condition simply says, this conditional variance is independent of V. And assume, once it's independent of V, it actually takes the invariant measure spread of this to be my value, sigma squared V. So that's my closure condition. Once you have this closure condition, you end up with a closed set of equations. And that's rather complicated, but pretty one. Another question, how good this set of equations is. Before we go into that question, we also want to ask the following. Can I do further reduction? Because that's still two equations. Although now it's no longer 2 plus 1, it's 2 1 plus 1 PDEs. Suppose my sigma, especially for AMPA type of neurotransmitters, sigma is short, 5 milliseconds. If I'm going to view that as a very small number, what you have is I can times cause sigma here, sigma here, sigma here, sigma g squared. Take the limit, sigma goes 0, so this drops out, this survives, and sigma g squared, look, sigma times sigma g squared is order 1, so it survives. Once you do this in coarse-graining time, you get a simple algebraic relation mu 1 as a function of this piece. That's what we said. Then we can plug in mu 1 here. What do we get is this simple Fokker-Planck equation. Okay, so you can guarantee the positivity of rho v, everything is good. And similarly, how you solve this problem, you need to set up the boundary problem value, which is simply says the flux of the thing is a fine rate. So going through this reduction in space and now coarse-graining in the architectural space and time, we get a very simple one. But of course, this one itself is still my central concern. How good it is? Let's compare the theory with a full numerical simulation. The solid line is a numerical simulation. The circles are theory for the distribution of rho. Now, for the firing rate, for different input driving strength, in the mean-driven limit, it would say, well, nothing happens until you reach threshold and then start to fire, then start to have a firing rate, final firing rates. The theory says, the kinetic theory says, you will start to fire the dashed line. And integral fire neuron simulation tells you from the fluctuation, that's what the fluctuation leads to, you will fire too, and they're very close. Now, for the sigma equals zero asymptotics, which leads to the Fokker-Planck equation, and qualitatively they're good. Especially it captures this small, strongest fluctuating, but small firing rate equation. Unlike the mean-driven one, completely failed here. And that reminds you of experiment before the threshold, it starts to have finite firing rates. Okay, so the theory works very well in single population. And not only that, the theory also predicts the following. If you make the connection between neurons stronger, talk to each other, very strong, what happens, it has a very rich dynamics. For example, if you start to turn up your external one first, then going down, what would happen? The mean-driven dynamics will tell you, you come up until you hit this threshold, then start jump up and go up. Then if you turn down your external drive, it will follow this path coming down. So it has a bistable and hysteretic. But the fluctuation one would tell you this with a finite sigma g squared, it jumped much earlier. Instead of here, it jumped here, then we go follow the similar path. And the blue one are numerical simulations for each individual realizations of different Poisson spike chain of input. And zoom in, you see the theory is red, and this is 8.1 to 8.4 So the jumping locations are crowded around theoretical prediction. And theoretical, of course, tells you the mean, because this whole thing is averaged over all possible expectation inputs. So now we can go back to the original problem, the problem we are interested in, spontaneous rate. So what we are building here is the tiling of the pinwheel again with this particular PDF representation, this kinetic representation. So these are the pinwheel structures you lay down in this cortex. And here shows the scale of the interaction. Red one, local excitatory scale size, and these blue ones are the long-range interaction anisotropic type. And what happens, you see, unlike the situation you turn off long-range connections, you only see a simple homogeneous population, no structures. Now, if you turn on, you see the pattern start to persist. It has specific time scales, and these time scales are controlled by this, essentially controlled by the MMDA, long neurotransmitter. And it also, essentially, it says you reproduce experimental spontaneous activity. And what we have been doing now is the issue whether how much MMDA you really need to make this work. If you use more MMPA, what pattern, what time scale will change? And for example, there's also issue in experiment, not only observing these similarity curves, they actually can reconstruct by looking at these curves the firing spectrums in experiment. So now the question is, can we reconstruct a similarity curve of this type of PDF representation and going back to the full numerical simulation to see we also capture the dynamics. So the message, physiological message here, remember, it's this building up the architecture is all the assumptions. Experimentalists cannot tell you how this architecture is built. Theorists have imposed these structures on your model. And here what we are really saying is this. For pinwheel, actually, developmentally, is probably imposed by external lights. And there's, of course, genetic reasons to form these pinwheels. Once you form these pinwheels, what happens is, along these particular angles I like, I will start to build dendritic trees, talk to other neurons along particular direction. So that's how this whole physiological model is really encoded or assumed in this whole theoretical endeavor. So to conclude, we have constructed some ideal network to really try to understand the fundamental or identifiable signature on functions, because it's very hard for you to find a model which can fit numbers from experiments. The problem with experiments is very dirty, and oftentimes these numbers don't really agree among themselves, among experimentalists. So you really have to find a particular signature rather than numbers. Okay. I have also presented a kinetic theory which is powerful enough to capture both mean-driven and fluctuation-driven case, and computationally it's very efficient, because you think about if you have 100,000 neurons, in order to get a rate right, you have to have multiple ensembles to really calculate. And here, just a single one pass OPD calculation, you get the rate. And that reduction is 3 or 4, conservatively, order of magnitude reduction in computation cost. And we also use this particular architecture applied to spontaneous activity using this kinetic theory, which gives you, at least right now, qualitative agreement with experiment. Thanks. Thank you.